Hey, good morning, everybody. Today's daf, Lamed Ches, sponsored by the Bouncers, Omo Construction. Appreciate the sponsorship. Also, the Bagel Munch, probably still in honor of the new grandkid. Okay, Oak. We are on actually starting a Lamed Zayin on Beis around eight or so lines up from the bottom, eight, nine, ten. In the case of Trokhnin, we're going to be discussing today. Trochnin, Trisa, Trima, and Shtisa. So let's not confuse those different food types. Totally different foods. Let's look at Trochnin. It's not like the Gemara also knew what all these things were. They asked also. Let's see. Trochnin. Now, this Trochnin food, the Gemara is going to ask what that is. We'll see what that is in a few lines. Anyway, here's what it says. It says, Chayavin bechala, v'chiyase raven amar b'yochanan trochnin peturin minachala. So it appears to be a machlokas ha-maraim whether this trochnin food, some kind of a bread-like food, is chayv v'chala or patur from chala. On the side of Vilna Gaon says all of that's wrong, that everybody agrees trochnin is patur, is peturin from chala. There's a patur of chala and trochnin. What's the issue here? The issue is, as relevant to us, is that the pasuk describes the mitzvah of chala for ba'achalchem. Milechem haaretz, when you're eating lechem. So lechem is a necessary condition for the mitzvah of challah. And over here, this trochnin food is some kind of a type of lechem. Question is, does it have a status of lechem? So on the side, Vilna Gaon makes the girsa. It works out really well here in the Gemara, is that everybody agrees, and there's no machlokes. It is lechem for purposes of challah. And then we're going to discover, on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, trochnin comes back in a different name. And it's going to be a machlokes about whether it's bracha is mezonos or hamotzi. That's okay. So that we'll talk about. Here we go. Trochnin, some kind of a bread-like food. We'll assume the Vilna Gaon's girsa is chayiv and challah. My trochnin, what is it? Amar Abaye. Abaye, the Amora says, kuba di'ara. Kuba di'ara is some kind of a concoction. You know, like we don't really have all these foods. So all we can do is extract the principle from it. So it's some kind of a food where it's a grain food. It's like a flour and water type of concoction, which is baked in an oven. And the only question about it really has to do with how is it eaten? Is it eaten as a like a cake, or is it eaten as a bread? And so that's what this stuff is. And we're being told over here that it's chayv and challah. Okay, so it's lechem. It'll come back on the next Amud. Amar Abaye Trisa, not to be confused with Trisa. Trisa is petura min achala. So when you're something is patur from challah, that means it is not a lechem. And get this clear: when a food is not a lechem, it means it's never going to be hamotzi. You never have to bench on it. It could be mezonos because mezonos doesn't have to be lechem. And some other lechem related halachos, we're going to see that in the next amud, cannot apply to it. So anyway, this trisa food, what is it? My trisa. The Gemara itself also wants to know what that is. Ikka d'amri, so it gives you three opinions. Unclear exactly what these three opinions are, but we're going to extract one very important halacha out of it.
Sounds like pancakes.
Yes, that's what we're going to see. The pancakes case, or like the blintz dough kind of case. But anyway, that kind of a thing. So my trisa, one opinion is gvil meratach. That's what we would call pancakes. Ikka d'amri nahama d'andaka. Others say it's some other kind of a bread product. Unclear exactly what. And ikka d'amri lechem asri lekutach. And others say it's some kind of a bread-like thing that really is intended to be eaten together with some other food. And it's also unclear from here what makes it different from ordinary bread. So Rashi has one comment on the bottom, which says the bottom line says that, well, it's not baked in an oven. It's sun-baked. So that's interesting because if that's true, so then what it's saying is, and we seem to accept this rule, incidentally, is that unless something is baked in an oven, it's not a lechem, even if it otherwise would resemble lechem. But if it's sun-baked rather than oven-baked, it's not a lechem. That's because the pasuk describes. It's the pasuk in next week's parsha. It says, "V'yafu eser nashim lachmechem b'tanur echad." That 10 families are gonna have only enough food to bake in a single oven. But that's a curse. But the point is that the baking of the bread is being described as happening in an oven, and so therefore that's a necessary definite requirement for lechem. So it says over here, whatever it is, If it's unbaked, it's not a lechem, or if it's pancakes. So what's wrong with pancakes? The pancake rule seems to be that it doesn't have a tsuras pas. It doesn't have a tohar lechem, a tsuras pas. It doesn't look like lechem. And why? Because what does lechem look like? That's really also very unclear. So at least one thing we can say about it is that it has to look like something. The pancakes, they just spread out and they just take whatever form it happens to be that they fall into. And so in a certain sense, it doesn't have a Torah lechem based on that consideration. Anyway, point is that even though you have a food like pancakes, which are made of the ingredients that lechem would be made of, and it's baked, not necessarily in an oven, but at least on a stovetop, but if it doesn't have the tzuras lechem, then it's not going to be a lechem at all, even for challah purposes. And then, of course, that means that therefore you'd never, even if you eat a full meal of pancakes, you won't say hamotzi on them, which is not true about other kinds of mizonos, like foods like cake. If you eat a whole lot of them, then you do have to wash and bench on them. And it's not true about pancakes. The Gemara asks, what do you mean, lechem asi lekutach is pater min hachala v'hatanya chayiv b'chala? Aye, but it says in different braisa that says that this kind of food is chayiv and challah. This lechem asi lekutach would be chayiv and challah. Now, according to Rashi, that means it was sun-baked, so that can never be chayiv and challah. So Rabbi Yehuda, ma'aseha mochichen aleha. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it depends what shape you made them into. If you make them into asan ke'avim, chayavim, and kelimudim peturim. It says it depends what shape you make them. Why should the shape matter? So some say that matters. It's like a maris ayin only. In other words, you know that you made them in the sun. You didn't bake them in an oven, but it's not obvious necessarily by looking at it. And so maybe the casual observer wouldn't necessarily understand what you did. And therefore, it looks like a maris ayin chiyuv for purposes of challah. And that's only if you learn with that pshat about that it didn't have the, it wasn't baked in an oven. Others say a whole other concept altogether. What's going on here is, has to do with the fact that it's not really human food, but it's like animal food, or it's non-food. So if you make a bread into a non-food, or like an animal food, then it would be pater also altogether. And then that the question about the shape maybe shows what you intended to use this food for. Okay, it was a little bit unclear exactly what the takeaway is for these halachas, because we don't really make food this way. Amalei Abaye l'Rav Yosef. Abaye and Eliyamor says to Rav Yosef, "Hai kubad the ara." So this is the troknin. Remember, this is what we said. Abaye earlier defined this troknin food, which we said earlier was according to the Vilna Gaon chayiv in challah. So it is a lechem food, and that's the key here. We're talking about a lechem kubad the ara. It is a lechem, but it's a kind of a funny lechem. We would call it like cake. So ma'im mevarchim ilaveh. What bracha do you say about it? What bracha do you say on it? Now he knows that it's already a lechem food, so the options are only going to be mizonos or hamotzi. So Amalei, so he said to him, misavrit nahamu. He says, what, do you think this is bread? Gubel bialmahu. It's not bread, it's only a gubel. I guess that meant something to them. I don't know exactly what he was saying about it. Okay, it's not a bread, it's like a cake. So therefore, it's only mizonos. Now, marzutra. Now, that doesn't mean that he's not challenging the challah rule. He's saying that even though it's chayav challah, it doesn't matter. It's still like a cake. In other words, cakes and cookies and these kinds of pastries are also chayav and challah, just that you say mizonos on them. Now, marzutra, the Amora says kavas udase ilave. He used to eat these things a lot, and when he would eat a lot of this, he would actually wash and bench. He would say emotzi and bench. Okay, that's very consistent what we know about pastries. That when you koveya su'uda on the pastry, pasa baba kisnin, that's called pasa baba kisnin, which I don't think we had yet, but we'll have soon enough. So the pasa baba kisnin rule is it's a lechem, which the Chazal are lenient that we don't have to wash nilas yadayim, we don't have to say emotzi, and we don't have to bench. We just say Mizonos and al hamichya, which only works as far as the Chazal have the authority. But when it encroaches onto a din d'oraisa, like possibly chal and like possibly benching when you're kaveh suda, so that's why they have to concede that this is really a bread food, and you'd have to say and you'd have to bench on it. And if you anticipate that, then for consistency, you'd have to wash and make a motzi. Any case, so that's what it says over here. It says that this food, this kuba de'ara, is like a cake, in which case It's mizonos unless you're kaveh suda, in which case then you have to wash, make a motzi and bench. Amar mar bar ravashi. And since this is a lechem, so now we get, of course, to the next consequence of it being a lechem, which is that this is actually kosher for matzah at the Seder. You can eat this as matzah at the Seder, my taima, lechem oni, krina bay. Because this food, this kuba diara, is lechem oni. Now, of course, in order to be lechem oni, it has to be lechem. So that's the main issue over here, is that this counts as a lechem. And that's, of course, connected to challah. So those are going to be, have a direct correspondence. If it's chayav and challah, it means that it would be eligible for matzah. The only thing is that matzah, regular bread, is chametz. So even if it's lechem, that's chametz. And this kuba d'yara stuff, I guess if you're careful that it's not chametz, then you would be able to eat this stuff as matzah. This obviously is not like pancakes. It could even be thicker, in which case, this was at a time when matzah didn't have to be flat wafers like what we Ashkenazim eat.
Like
Well, it's even more than the Sephardim. It was a kind of a thing that it could even be large. Like it could even be
a lot from
a
the
big
Sephardim.
blot. Nah, but it could even be thick.
That's a Yemenite matzah.
Even
Yemenite matzah.
thick?
I don't know how thick, but they're thicker. They're like.
Right, so that you're talking about that, but this thing is like, imagine that you actually took a bread loaf, a pan, and then you actually bake that into a matzah. Now we would say that's not possible because it's just too thick. It's not even thin at all. It's not even an attempt to try to thin it out. But thinness was a later thing. The only thing that they really cared about, even in times of the Gemara, was you couldn't make it too large. They didn't like large for matzah, but they didn't really have problems with thick. That was a later thing. Even the Sfardim that don't have the same type of thing that we have, still they try to make it thin. All right, in any case, so that's it for bread. Now we're moving past the bread issues, and now we're talking about fruit. Amar Mar Baravashi. Mar Baravashi has the following comment to say: Hi, Duvsha de Tamare. This date honey. Okay, date honey. How do you make date honey? Well, I'm not sure exactly, but let's imagine that the way you make date honey is very simply, you just somehow or other you exert pressure onto the dates and you squeeze out the gooey stuff from inside, and that's the date honey. I don't know if that's exactly how it would be done, but if you did such a thing, so then essentially it amounts to you squeeze the fruit and you extracted the juice. In this case, from dates, the juice is honey. So what bracha do you say when you eat that stuff? So what are the options? Well, the options presumably are obviously maybe it hates because it's a food and it's a date, and maybe it's not. Maybe it's not. So he says, So he says that the date honey is shahakol. My taima zeya be almahu, because that the honey is actually not the pre. It's just some liquid that was trapped inside the pre that you've just released. So it's not the pre. This is an amazing concept. The concept of a pre, let's say an apple, right? So what he's saying over here is this is no different from any other juice that you squeeze out of a fruit. You take an orange, you take an apple, you squeeze it, you get juice. Okay, what? So now you have two things. You have the leftover solid, I don't know, cellulose, whatever the fruit is made of, I don't know. And then you have the juice. So when it was all together and intact, it was all one pre. And let's say for purposes of what's the shear, what your quantity is, it's the whole thing counts. But now we're being told that all the juice doesn't count as the pre. All of it is just stuff that's trapped in the pre, but it's not the pre. Pre is only like the solid tissue, that kind of a thing. That's the pre, and the juice is not. So it's an amazing thing. So being told the juice, that's just shahakol. That doesn't even count as the pre. It's only the rest of it that's a pre. So while you have a composite entity, this is the principle that we're getting out of this, a composite entity whose identity is only one of the components of the composite. It's only the solid particles of the fruit. But while it's combined and it's a single composite entity, all of it has the status. All of it has a status of the pre, And when you resolve it into separate parts, so then each one gets its new identity. So only the solid remains the pri, and the liquid remains a nothing, a shahakol only. That's what it says over here in this Gemara. Meaning, what if you squeezed it, but you kind of also mashed up some of the solid part into it as well? It shouldn't matter. That should be like an ikar v'tuffel type of a thing, where the most of it is the juicy part, and the pulp is a tuffel to the juice. So the tuffel is gonna be covered by the bracha on the ikar. So it would still not be ha'etz, unless what you said was like a different thing, like the applesauce discussion, which is I didn't squeeze the juice out of the apple. I actually mashed the apple itself into a sauce, and now what is this? So that's going to be, we'll have to see a little bit. We'll get into, there are two cases on our, this is, the applesauce is the sugya here, and that we're looking at also. So we're first being told about the trima, no, the duvsha de tamare is shahakol on the assumption that fruit juice does not count as the fruit. Now, we all know that it's not true. When it comes to grapes, the grape juice is not shahakol, it's bar priha gafen, and olive oil. So olive grapes and olives are different. Their juices are considered the pri itself for many purposes, many purposes. We're going to see at least one or two other halachos on this amud. So what's the difference? So this actually leads, it's an interesting contemporary question. So the way some Rishonim talk about this, they say as follows. They say, because when people plant, I don't know, and cultivate fruit, they intend to eat the fruit as fruit, which is not true for grapes and for olives, because for grapes and for olives, you're cultivating the fruit for its juice, but nothing else. You're never certainly going to, grow.
You don't need olives? You don't need plain
Well, grapes? You might do that too, but what's the olive market compared to the olive oil market? So maybe in our 21st century, things might have changed, but back then it was no contest at all. So that we understand for them. But what about nowadays, where of course things have changed? We have plenty of fruit. That most of the fruit, or a lot of the fruit, a significant amount of the fruit, is really of the fruit market is really for its juice. And in particular, I'm thinking of oranges. So oranges. There's an enormous orange juice market, and a lot of orange groves are specifically for juicing. So
right, you have orange, or you have orange juice oranges.
Yeah,
the peeling.
The orange juice
right.
Oranges.
Right, they're very thin.
Right, so
squeezes a whole lot, and the ones that you eat, the outer layer is so thick.
So the Rishonim who talk about on this sugya, the question about why are grapes and olives different from all the other fruit, they're the way they talk about it affects what we should say about orange juice. Because there's, according to this, a theoretical possibility, we'll see why it's not going to be true later on, but that maybe orange juice ought to be ha'etz. Because of the way we nowadays plant those oranges with juice in mind, so then maybe the juice is the pri. All right, in any case, so the Gemara now has the following. You're really going to treat juice like it's nothing? It's not this. It doesn't. In other words, it doesn't have the status of pri. Gemara says, "Hu kiman ki haitana." Oh, meizal yamahu kiman ki haitana. This nan, like it says in the Mishnah Trumos. What does it say? Devash tamarim v'yein tapuchim v'chomet sefunios v'shar mei peros shel truma. What if I have the fruit juice? It's essentially describing fruit juice of truma. Now, truma has kedusha. The rule of truma is that it's only permissible to be eaten by a kohen who's tahor. If a zar, a non-kohen who eats the truma b'shogeg, has to pay keren v'chomesh. That's the rule of a zar she'achal truma. A zar she'achal truma has to pay keren v'chomesh. Has to replace, in other words, has to replace the truma, and also a knas. So what happens if he doesn't eat the pri of truma, but he only ate the juice from the pri of truma? So you had some truma apples, and somebody squeezed them, and then the non-kohen ate the apple juice. So what's the rule? Rabbi Eliezer, mechayev karen v'chomesh. Rabbi Eliezer says, that's called eating truma. And Rabbi Yoshua poter. Rabbi Yoshua says, he's not eating the truma. It's not It doesn't have the status of pre. Okay, it's a little bit complicated exactly what Rabbi Shua's principle is. But anyway, we're saying over here in the Gemara that it's not a pre. And if it's not a pre, presumably then it's not going to have the same rules as Truma. And that's Rabbi Shua's point, is that it's called Zeya Bialma. And that's what the Gemara says, is that that's that rule about Duvsha de Tamari. The Duvsha de Tamari, Marba Ravashi. Well, he was just simply applying Rabbi Shua, the Tana, Rabbi Shua's principle that he articulated about Truma. He applies it also to the question of the Bracha. Now, Amar Lei Ahumei Rabbanan LeRava. One of the Talmidim asks Rava the following question. He says, Trima Mahu. What's the rule of Trima? Trima is like a mash. He asks him, what's the rule of mash? So Lo Havadayde the Rava by Kuamarle. So he'd understand what he was asking, what the guy was asking. Like, you get the impression, like Rava is saying to him, I don't understand, what are you talking about? What's the problem? He's trying to understand what the question was asking. Yosef Ravina Kami de Rava. Now, Ravina happened to have been sitting there, and Omerle, so Ravina tries to help, and he tries to ask the guy who's asking this question, what kind of mash? Do you mean the shimshimi ko'amrit, or the kortimi ko'amrit, or the portzini ko'amrit? Wait, what kind of mash? Are you talking about, like, sesame mash? And the question that you're asking is about, maybe mashed sesame is... Rashi says because it's mixed with wine, maybe that's what you're asking, or maybe the kortimi or the portzini. Rashi tells you what these questions what these refer to. In other words, you're asking about those kinds of food types, mixtures. So adahachi v'hachi. So before getting any clarity on the question, Rava pipes up with, "Hey, I know. I'll bet I know what you mean to ask me." Now we don't really care so much about the question. Now we just care about what Rav has to say about this. Adahachi v'hachi, while this was all going on, Aski Rav l'date, Amrle, oh, chashilta v'adiko amrit. I know, you're asking about, like, mashed fruit. That's what you're asking. V'ad kartan milsa, and that reminds me of something Hadi Amar Rav Asi, something that Rav Asi said, which is as follows. Hai tamare shel truma mutar la'asos mehem trima v'yosar la'asos mehem shechar. I remember Rav Ashi saying that if a person is a Kohen, let's say in possession of truma, of tamarim, of dates, of truma, so a Kohen has some truma dates, what's he allowed to do with those dates? Well, one rule is you're not allowed to ruin the truma food, so you're not allowed to ruin it. So can I take them... And can I squeeze out the honey? Presumably no. Because that we said that's turning it into non-truma pri. So it's like wasting it. All that stuff is wasted. So you have to eat it as is, presumably. But can I at least mash it? Can I at least, smash the tamarim to make them kind of softer into a mush? So this is what we're being told. That mutar, hai tamari shel truma, mutar la'asos mehem trima, v'yosar la'asos mehem shechar. He says you are allowed. You're allowed to mash the tamarim, and that remains a pri. In other words, presumably for our purposes, that would remain bar pri ha'etz. But osar la'asos mehem shechar. But what you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to take the tamarim and turn them into a beverage. Turn them into a beverage, turn them into a drink. Like, I don't know exactly what they would be doing over here, but presumably, whatever they would be doing would be, in a certain sense, ruining the pre of Truma, and so that's not permissible. But for our purposes, you're allowed to mash them. So, Hilchasa and the Psak Halacha is as follows. Whenever the Gemara gives us, when we're lucky to have a Gemara's Hilchasa that's useful for us, almost all cases, we actually follow it. So Hilchasa, Tamare v'yavdenu trima, if you had some fruit, like tamarim, and you mashed it, mevarchim elevei bari pri ha'etz, then you say ha'etz on it. Mai taima, why do you say ha'etz? Bimil sahu kaimi kedemeikar, because it's essentially unchanged from what it was before. So this is what leads to the whole discussion about applesauce. What's the rule about applesauce? Because the applesauce, in some ways, it's like this. You just kind of take the apples and mash them. Exactly what applesauce is, and that's why there's a whole discussion about What kind of texture? Are we talking about smooth? Are we talking about with pieces? How piecey are the pieces of applesauce? Anyway, it all depends on the question of how much mashing was going on in the dates versus in the apples. And that's really what this whole thing is all about.
Sounds like one of the differences is if you're separating parts out and some part you're eating and some part you're throwing, you're getting rid of.
But since in applesauce it doesn't happen,
Right.
so presumably it should be identical. So you should have to eat on
No
applesauce.
matter how what
Right,
the
that's what it seems to
Well,
say.
applesauce, you're getting rid of parts of it. You don't keep the skin usually. You don't throw the skin into the applesauce. It's usually
Well, that's
just
a
the
good
pulp.
point, but
It's just the pulp, and you don't keep the
okay, that's a
part
good
of the
point, but the
core either. You don't put it in the
right,
pulp.
but the parts that you're keeping are the parts that would be pre, even if you just
Mm-hmm.
ate it intact, right? If you ate it as
Well,
is.
most people eat apple skins.
Right, but if you didn't, you'd still say eats on the interior of the
Right.
apple. And if I took that, which is a full apple that I would say eats on, and I just start crushing it and mashing it, and I didn't really remove any parts of it at that point. So at that point, it should remain what it was. It's not the same as squeezing the juice out of it, and then I have. So that's what he's saying, is that it ought to remain a eights. The ones that don't have. There's a whole other issue going on over here, which we didn't talk about, which is the Tosas Hay Duvsha de Tamare gives you three. He has a question of how to deal with. What is he dealing with over here? The difference between beer and the date honey stuff. In other words, the beer is also kind of a liquidy product of the shachar. And what else? And soup. I think we had that also. Maya de Silka. Yeah, we had that already. The Maya de Silka sugya. That was on a previous daf, I think. Where you're saying hadama on it. So how do you reconcile all of these things? How do you reconcile the principles? The Tosas has three opinions going on over here, which is kind of important for our purposes, which is, well, why is it that sometimes you're saying shehakol on the product and sometimes not? Sometimes it remains the ikar, like what does he say? Shefer. Shechar didan. Tosas asks, what bracha do we say on the shechar? Afal gav d'shem yesh ben kizayis b'techilis pras. Even though he might have some barley would be a mizonos, and that's how you're making the beer. So it could be in a certain sense, it's really a like a barley soup. So why aren't you treating shechar like barley soup? Is his question. Lo mevarchim alav barei minei mizonos ala shahakol. Why? So he has different opinions. One opinion is because it doesn't have. The seorim really in it. It's like strained out. Another opinion is ein shecher ela taima bialma. Another mission machine about yelo pass. Second opinion is because grains that you kind of ferment is not the same as grains that you bake, and so it's considered nishtana. And the third opinion at Tosas say, and they reiterate this third opinion on the bottom of the page, is one that the Shulchan Aruch accepts, seems to accept. Which is b'shtiyah omer shehakol, that any drink, any beverage that you drink is always automatically shehakol as a kind of a policy. So we're going to see a little bit more about that soon. So if that's what's going on, so then you have to kind of move the drinks off the table as being its own policy. And then with respect to foods, then we have to discuss more about what's called the nishtana question. So duvsha de tamare is a food. It's not a drink. You can't drink the honey. So the duvsha de tamare, that would be nishtana, we're saying, that it's only the zeya. When it comes to the apples themselves that are mashed, well, that would be considered the pri itself, just that it's slightly mashed. Now Rashi makes the comment. If you look at what Rashi says in the definition of trima. Rashi says, "Shem Trima." Rashi is around 12 lines down. Kol davar ha-katush kitzas ve'eino merusak. Something that's slightly mashed but not fully pureed, I guess. I don't know, pulverized or something. So Rashi may be making a point about how it'll still depend upon what your final product looks like at the end. If you take that seriously, so then the applesauce will depend upon what its final texture, I guess, would look like.
Chunky.
Yeah, so in which case, what it might mean is, and this is the way some of the poskim talk about it, is how much of the tzura of a pri do you need to retain the bari pri ha'etz rule? So that's the point. The point is that because it's hard to be definitive about the applesauce case, that's why it has kind of fallen out to be a suffix bracha situation. And whenever you have a suffix bracha situation, when the options are ha'etz or shahakol, it's going to end up being shahakol. I just point out that there is a third possibility that the Rishonim have in the back of the Gemara, which is, of course, the third logical possibility, which is bar pri ha'adama, an applesauce, oddly enough, because that's how some get out of some of the contradictions between one sugya and the next, is that vegetable soups are hadama, even though the vegetable soups can be soupy and not even vegetable-y. And then you're still going to say hadama on them. Maya de silka is still going to be hadama. So why is that? So some make the distinction, well, for Bari Pri Hadama, I don't care what it looks like. And even if it looks all mashed and liquidy and everything, I can still say Bari Pri Hadama on it. Ha'etz, it needs to look like a pri. So that distinction would tell us that if you have applesauce that's totally mashed, would be a hadama. So because we have three theoretical possibilities on what the applesauce rule is, that's why it's kind of fallen out as shahakol, unless it's very clearly apple-y. All right, then the Gemara has this next case called shtisa. Shtisa is a grain product that you turn into some kind of a concoction. And here we have some question. Shtisa, Rav Amar Shehakol Niyem Devar and Shmuel Amar Bari Minim Zonos. So the question here is, the shtisa product is a grain mixture product where it's either Shehakol or Mizonos. Amar Afista Lo Pligi. Now Afista Yamara says, well, really, both of them would be right if they're talking about different cases. Namely what? Ha be'ava, ha be'raka. Depending on what you made. If you made a thick food as a food, so then that's mizonos. And everybody would concede that. But if you make it raka into a liquid, like a shake, so then it's shahakol. And everybody would agree to that. So now he explains, ava liachila koavdila, and therefore it's mizonos, because the ikar is the grain. But if it's raka, but if you made it into like a shake, like some kind of a drink, so then, and he doesn't say, which would be nice if he did, but he doesn't say, well, that's just a drink, so that's why it's shahakol. That's not what he said. He said, if it's raka, then it's lirifua koavdila. Then it'll be soothing, and it'll be soothing for your throat, it'll be therapeutic. And if it's therapeutic, so that's why it's shahakol. Wow. So let's see. Masiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef attacks Rav Chista's explanation. He says, wait a minute. It can't be true, because we know that there's a brisa. Or there's a, well, I guess it might be a brisa. The Gemara says, v'shavin, yeah, a brisa that says, v'shavin, shebokh shenes hashtos v'shabes v'shosin zesam ha-mitzri. Says that you're allowed to, this is on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you're allowed to bochshin es hashtos. You're allowed to mix this shtisa. The shtos is like the shtisa concoction on Shabbos. And presumably also eat it. And shosim zesam hamitzri. And you're allowed to drink this, some thing, zesam hamitzri, whatever it is, some kind of a thing. And the point being that these are things that the person is making these foods and eating these foods for purposes of feeling better on Shabbos. I guess it's soothing for their throat or whatever. So now the problem is, but you're not allowed to do refuas on Shabbos. Since you're not allowed to do refuas on Shabbos, so if we're being told, as a matter of fact, you are allowed to make this shtos and drink it, then it can't be that it's a refuah. Incidentally, why are you allowed to make the shtus? Why isn't it a problem of lisha on Shabbos? That's the issue, because why are you allowed to make a shtos concoction on Shabbos, which is like a grainy, liquidy thing? You're allowed to stir it up. You're allowed to make it. So the answer is, it's because presumably the product that you end up with is going to be something like a crystallite or a quick or something like that, in which case you end up with a still very non-viscous product, and that's not going to be a leisha problem. That's why it would be allowed. So it says over here, so clearly you can't be a refua. So how did you interpret this to be a refua issue? And that's why it's shahakol. Amalei abaye v'atlo tisbra. But don't you know that some refuas are permissible on Shabbos, namely which ones? Tatanan, like it says in the Mishnah, kol ochlim ochel adam l'refua b'Shabbos v'kol mashkim shosa adam. That don't you know that it says that you are allowed to eat all kinds of non-medicines for medicinal purposes? That as long as the food that you're eating is a food, and this is the way it's described in Shulchan Aruch, it's called machal briyim, any kind of a food that somebody who is healthy would also eat, just that you're eating it only because it's therapeutic and you're benefiting from it, and you would only eat this food because something hurts you, because something is irritating you, something is pain, something is bothering you, and so you're drinking this as a refua, but that the Chazal don't forbid that type of refua. They're only forbidding things like medicines, which you're only taking because you're sick. And if you were feeling fine, you would not take this stuff. But that's not what this shtus is. This shtisa stuff, it's a regular food. It's a regular beverage, just that you're eating it. And most people, I guess, would eat this for refuah purposes, for its therapeutic value, but not only. And that's all he's saying. He's saying that this is a regular food product. So it says here, so clearly, you know, that doesn't bother me, the fact that you're allowed to eat this on Shabbos. It's still, the person is still making it be'ikar as a refuah. That's why it's shahakol. So the point of what's permissible in Shabbos is if you're eating it as like a food that has therapeutic value. That's mutter. Now the Gemara says, Lishna achrina, el ma'yislach le'memer, gavra li'achila kamechavin refuah, mimele ka'avya, chanami li'achila kamechavin refuah, mimele ka'avya. Same kind of a thing. So incidentally, the Gemara says the following. It says here, utzricha derav, and we still have to be told Rav's rule about shahakol on a shtisa beverage. De'imehai havamina li'achila kamechavin refuah, mimele ka'avya. Just because you're allowed to eat this thing on Shabbos as a food, that wouldn't necessarily tell me what bracha to say on it. Because why? Because aval hacha kiven delechatchila lerefuah kamechavein lo livrecha leklal. I might have had a havamina that when I am individually eating some kind of a food purely for its refuah value, maybe no bracha is necessary. Now you might stop me and say, I won't have that havamina here because one daf ago, or two dafim ago, when the same exact question came up, we were told exactly the same havamina, and we were told exactly that maskana is that it's not true. That even refuah foods that are actually foods that are, I guess they have a taste, then they're foods, not just medicinal. So then you do say a bracha on them. So, okay, agreed. So this havamina is a havamina for purposes of people who have not read the previous two dafim. And so the havamina is maybe you shouldn't say a bracha on them at all as refuah. So kamash melan. So that's what we hold. We hold that refuahs do need a bracha, not if it's a pill, but only if it's like a lozenge or something. Like, but they make it yummy, so you have to say a bracha on it. Kamash melan, kiven this lehanu aminei, boy bruchei. So that is the rule. The halacha is that with respect to refuahs, you don't say bracha on it when it's like a pill or something, which doesn't have any food characteristics. But if it's something that is like flavored or something, then you have to say bracha on it when you take it.
What about a vitamin?
Same kind of thing.
Like a gummy vitamin.
Yeah, same kind of thing. As opposed to if it's a pill that you just swallow and you don't say bracha on it. Okay, so before we move into the next sugi over here, just the last little piece is that, according to what we just said, the drinking was not emphasized in our Gemara, but the refuah was emphasized in our Gemara. So that is where in the Rishonim over here, they kind of divide into what is the point here? Is the point that this is a beverage and it's shahakol, but a medicine does get a bracha? Which bracha does it get? It gets whatever bracha would be applicable to it. Or is that not what's going on? What's going on is all medicines are all shahakols. In other words, you could have argued that that's what's going on here. Why does this shtisa, which I've turned into a kind of a drink, why is that turning into a shahakol? So Gemara says, well, because it's like a refuah. But is that because, yeah, but so what? But it's a refuah, but it would be a mizonos refuah. So say mizonos. So how did it turn into shahakol? So some understand because all refuahs automatically turn into shahakol. And others say, no, because it's like what Tosafot say on the bottom. It's that all beverages are shahakol. But if you could visualize, let's say, some kind of a ha'etz or a adam or a mizonos or some kind of a thing which you are taking as a refuah only, what bracha would you say on that? Was that going to really be the ha'etz bracha or the adam bracha? Again, no examples come to mind immediately, but probably this might, I don't know, come up. Anyway, it's a question in the Shulchan. Okay, moving on. We're good to like easier things. These are kind of more baffling things. Let's see what it says here. The Mishnah, we're back into the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that all, it gives you the wording of the different brachos, and it says for many foods, you're saying Bori Priya Eitz, and Bori Priya Adama, and Bori Priya Gafen. And then it says here, except Pas, you say Hamoti Lechem and Aretz. That's what it says in the Mishnah. So listen to this. We actually have a question about what's the wording of the bracha. Tan Rabbanan, Mahu Omer. Abraisa says, well, what actually exactly are the words of this bracha? The Tanakhama says, Hamotzi lechem en aretz. That's what we're familiar with. Rabbi Nehemiah, the other Tan Rabbi Nehemiah says, no, it's Motzi lechem min haaretz. Not with a hey. It's Motzi lechem en aretz. Amar Rava. Now Rava analyzes this machlokas among the Tanaim, which happened centuries before his time, but the point is Rava is now here explaining what this fight is about. It's not a polar machlokas. It's not an only A or only B. This is what Rava says. The motzi, look, the wording of motzi lechem and aretz kuli amalo pligi, the apik mashma. In Aramaic, the word apik is the same as in Hebrew, the word hotzi, which means he extracted. Right? That's what the word is. So, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. He extracted lechem min haaretz. That's the way the wording of the bracha is. So, everybody agrees that motzi lechem min haaretz, Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, motzi lechem min haaretz, is God who extracted, in past tense, lechem min haaretz d'chsiv, kel, motzi yami mitzrayim, like the Pasuk says in Bilam's Nevuos, describes Hashem as God, the one who took them out of Mitzrayim, motzi yami mitzrayim, the one who took them out of Mitzrayim, in past tense. Ki pligi, what's the machlok satanayim, beha motzi, whether you say the extra hey, why? Hey does not mean the, in that sense, I mean, it does, but it doesn't only necessarily mean that. Rabbanan Savri Ha Motzi De'apik Mashma. Right? So Tanakama hold, the regular Shita is that Ha Motzi the same thing. Apik Mashma. It means that God who took the Lechem out of the Aretz. Dechsiv Ha Motzi Lechamayim Mitzura Chalamish. Like the Pasuk says, that God is the one who took the water out of the stone. Rabbi Nehemiah, so what's Rabbi Nehemiah's shita? Savar, he holds, ha motzi demapik mashma. No, it's no good. I can't say ha motzi lechem in aretz, because ha motzi means God, the one who takes the lechem in aretz. It's a kind of a present tense. Ha motzi, the one who takes. Demapik mashma. Mapik means motzi, the one who is taking in present tense, or takes. Mashma. Shenemar, ha motzi eschem yitachas sivlas Mitzrayim. Like the Pasuk says that, you know, you're going to find out, Hashem is saying, you're going to find out that I am the one, ha motzi eschem yitachas sivlas Mitzrayim. I'm the one who, now at that time, remember, this is all at the beginning of the process. It didn't happen yet. So this is when the Pasuk says Hashem is telling the Bnei Yisrael, you know, you're going to find out, v'idatem kani Hashem, that I am the one, ha motzi eschem yitachas sivlas Mitzrayim, who's taking you out. So you see hamotzi in a kind of a present tense type of usage. So anyway, what's the premise of this whole discussion? The whole premise of the whole discussion is that the bracha is supposed to be in past tense. God who took lechem out of the aretz. That is so odd to me. I have to tell you, I've been looking around. I cannot understand at all where this is coming from. Why that is the assumption. Why that is the premise. I'll tell you why I'm saying, because when you just, it's so obvious when you contrast it to the other in the Mishnah. Look, what are the other brachas that we say on foods? Well, let's see. It says, Paris, Elaine, you say, Bore Priya Eitz, or Bore Priya Gafen, or Bore Priya Adama. None of those things are past tense. Everything is all Hashem is the creator. So how did we suddenly, when it comes to lechem, get in our heads the notion that we have to convey Hashem in the past tense as the one who did motzi? Okay, so I haven't really found anything that's satisfying. But anyway, that's just the premise of the whole discussion, is that we're trying to come up, for people who appreciate the Hebrew diktuk, I guess this is something that's saying something to them. People who aren't really getting the Hebrew diktuk is all just, you know, it's not really that relevant.
But that word could also mean he is still constantly.
Exactly so.
Not only in past tense, but also present.
Right, and that's the problem. The problem is that when you say something like what Hashem did do, it could mean has done, and has a connotation of and still.
Right.
Has and still, hasn't terminated. Of course. So all of these subtleties really all matter. And so, okay, we could spend a lot of time trying to really work out the ins and outs of the grammar here, but instead of doing that, we'll just keep going on here. But this is what we're being exposed to, what Machlokes among Tanaim, about whether the word of the bracha is hamotzi or motzi. Now we're going to try to go back and forth and see whether we can prove one way or the other. V'rabbanan, what did Rabbanan say to Reb Nechemya's proof? Aho, achi ko amr lehu kutsha brichu l'Yisrael. No. This is what Hashem is telling B'nai Yisrael. Hashem is telling B'nai Yisrael not the word that hamotzi eschem mitachas sivus Mitzrayim, meaning that Hashem is doing it, but karma pikna lechu, when I take you out of Mitzrayim, avidna lechu milsa, I'm going to do it in such a way, ki heichi diya deisu, so at that time, when you reflect back, you will know, dianahu diapikis yaschon mi Mitzrayim. I was the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. See, dechsiv, vidatem, you're going to know then, ki ani Hashem lokechem motzi, the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. Okay. In any case, so it's a question. We're not done with the sugi. Let's keep going. Mishtabchi right now. We're told the following interesting kind of a story. We're told as the following. Once upon a time, Rabbi Zeira's Talmidim used to tell Rabbi Zeira about this really great diktuk expert, Rav Zvid's son. Rav Zvid's son was a diktuk expert. Mishtabchin le'rabbanan the Rabbi Zeira's Bar Rav Zvid. And incidentally, it's not Reb Shimon Bar Rav Zvid. It was a different anonymous guy. It's just a little funny. We're talking about an anonymous son of Rav Zvid, who was really a great diktuk expert, apparently. And Rabbi Zeira was told, wow, this guy is great. The Adam Gadol who, Baki Bibrachos. He is an expert in brachos. And so Amar Lahem, so he tells them, wow, I can't wait to meet this guy. Well, if you ever see this guy, bring him over. I'd be happy to meet him. So anyway, one time this guy is there, and the Talmidim say, oh, great, you know, the Rebbe wants to meet you. So in the course of their hanging out, they're schmoozing, and I guess they're talking, and so now they bring some food, and they give this guy some lechem to eat. And now they want to watch how this guy says the bracha, because we're talking about, is he going to say hamotzi or motzi? Amar. Now again, these are Amoraim. So you already had our Mishnah, even though you had this the Raisa as a Machlokes. So now, like, Rav Zvid wants to kind of test this guy. Amar. Okay, so what did he say? Amar, what did he say? He said, Motzi Lechem and Aretz. He said, Motzi Lechem and Aretz. Now, that's kind of interesting. What would our reaction be to a guy who said, Melech HaOlam, Motzi Lechem and Aretz? We might say, wow, this guy knew even the opinion among the Tanoim that's not really reflected here in this Mishnah, and it's not been common practice, and Well, he must really have some kind of a policy here that's driving this departure from regular practice. No, that wasn't his reaction. His reaction was, who needs him? This is a guy that people are praising? This guy didn't even commit. Now, remember how we said it. We set it up as the word motzi, everybody would agree, is good. And the question is hamotzi good? That was the test case. Is he going to say hamotzi? So no, he says motzi. Who needed him? Anybody could say motzi and be fine. That's the way the Gemara is saying it. So you got angry at him. Bishlami amr hamotzi, I understand. If he had said, now we're on the beast, Ashmoina time of Yashmoina ilfasaka Rabbanan, I would understand what he's doing, and I would understand that he's paskening like Rabbanan. Eladyam remotzi? It's like he's remaining non-committal. My kamashmalan. It's like you can't win. I gotta say, I mean, it's a little funny. So why does the bracha expert say motzi? V'ihu, the avar, the apuke nafshimit plukta. Why did he do it his way? Precisely because, so this way he would not have to take a stand and make somebody, make feel like take a side. He may as well do something to make everybody happy, which is an interesting attitude in Pesach. It's so interesting. These two attitudes of, well, there's a question in halacha. What's the posek's mindset? Is his mindset, I will think of what will make everybody happy, or I will think of what I think is right, and as long as it's one of the options, I'll disregard the other options because that's not my agenda. My agenda is to try to come to right. So that happens to be reflected here in this kind of attitude machlokas here. Rav Zvid wanted him to take a stand. And this Rav Ashi said, what do I have to take a stand? The man is about to say a bracha that everybody will agree is good. It's almost identical to the mezuzah question on the door. Because we have a mezuzah kind of on a slope. And if you look at the history of where that's coming from, that's taking a position which everybody agrees is not right, but everybody agrees is kosher. So rather than like taking a stance, we just come like make everybody happy. So that's the question. Is that what the rabbi is supposed to be doing when he's processing the halacha? Anyway, the Gemara says, Hilchasa, what's the psak? Hamosi lacha min ha'aretz. The kaimelon kerabanan, the amri, the apik, mashma. Tosis quotes from the Yerushalmi, there's another benefit of saying hamotzi over motzi, which is because it'll help you enunciate all the words correctly. Because when you say melech ha'olam motzi, so you would lose a mem. And apparently that's something they cared about. And according to the Talmud Yerushalmi, they care about it so much that they'll try to choose wording in a way as to avoid that problem. Yeah. If we were more sensitive to it, so then we would appreciate that more. Anyway, we can, I guess. Yeah. All right, what's up here? The Gemara has, it's a totally new sugya coming up.
Okay.